A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a good follow-through on a thread we've been circling for a while. We've talked about narcissistic personality disorder, about the tactics, gaslighting, flying monkeys, triangulation. But Daniel's asking us to zoom out. He wants to know what family system actually means as a clinical term, not just as pop psychology shorthand. And he's right that there's something more specific here. A whole field of therapy that treats the family itself as the patient, not just the individual. The framework comes from a psychiatrist named Murray Bowen, who developed it in the 1950s and 60s at the Menninger Clinic, and later at Georgetown. And once you see family dynamics through his lens, a lot of what gets called narcissistic abuse starts to look like symptoms of a deeper structural problem, one that predates the pop psychology label by decades.
The thing that makes Bowen's approach genuinely radical is the shift in what you're looking at. In individual therapy, CBT, psychodynamic work, the problem lives inside the person. You treat the depressed patient, the anxious patient, the personality disordered patient. Bowen flipped that entirely. He treated the individual as a node in an emotional network. The symptoms belong to the system, not just to the person exhibiting them.
The teenager who's acting out isn't a problem. They're the billboard advertising the problem.
And Bowen arrived at this not through abstract theory, but through clinical observation. He was working at the Menninger Clinic in the late 1940s and early 50s, studying families with schizophrenic members. What he noticed was that when the identified patient, the person with the diagnosis, started improving, other family members would deteriorate. The mother would get depressed. The father would develop physical symptoms. The system was fighting to maintain its equilibrium.
Which is a deeply unsettling idea. The family unconsciously needs someone to be sick.
Needs is maybe too strong, but the system organizes around the symptom. And Bowen's key insight was that this isn't unique to families with severe mental illness. The same emotional processes operate in every family. The difference is intensity, not kind. A family with a narcissistic parent isn't running on a different operating system than a healthy family. The same dynamics are just cranked up to destructive levels.
What exactly did he map out? What are the moving parts?
He boiled it down to 8 core concepts. They're the spine of the whole framework. Differentiation of self, triangles, nuclear family emotional process, family projection process, multi-generational transmission process, emotional cutoff, sibling position, and societal emotional process. We're going to spend most of our time on the first 5. Those are the ones that directly explain the narcissistic family dynamics Daniel's asking about. The other 3 will surface as supporting ideas.
Let's start with the big one then. Differentiation of self. What does that actually mean in daily life, not in a textbook?
It's the central axis of Bowen's whole theory. Differentiation is the ability to separate thinking from feeling. To hold your own identity, your own values, your own emotional state, while staying connected to the family. Bowen imagined a theoretical scale from 0 to 100. At 0, you're completely fused, no boundary between you and the emotional field around you. At 100, you're fully differentiated, which nobody actually achieves. Most people fall between 25 and 75.
Fusion is the opposite. One person's anxiety floods the system, and everyone else automatically reacts.
Here's how it plays out. Say a narcissistic father comes home stressed about work. He's low differentiation. He can't sit with his own anxiety and process it internally. Instead, that anxiety radiates outward. His wife, also low differentiation, absorbs it. She can't stay calm and separate either, so she snaps at the kids. The kids feel the tension and act out. Within 20 minutes, the father's work stress has become a full family crisis, and nobody in the chain consciously decided anything. It's pure emotional contagion.
The narcissistic element here, the father in your example, his low differentiation means he experiences any challenge to his authority as an existential threat to his self. He can't separate. My child disagrees with me, for my child is attacking my core being.
That's exactly the mechanism. A differentiated person can hear criticism or disagreement and think, that's their perspective. I don't have to absorb it or destroy it. A low differentiation person experiences disagreement as fusion threatening. If you're not with me, you're against me, and if you're against me, I'm dissolving. So the narcissistic response, rage, manipulation, devaluation, is fundamentally an anxiety regulation strategy. It's not calculated evil, it's automatic.
Which doesn't make it less damaging, but it does reframe it from, this person is a monster, to this person cannot self-regulate, and the whole family pays the price.
That brings us to the second concept, triangles. Bowen called the triangle the basic molecule of any emotional system. Here's how it works. When two people have unresolved tension, the anxiety between them becomes intolerable. So they pull in a third person to stabilize. It's automatic. You see it everywhere. Two coworkers griping about a boss, two siblings complaining about a parent, a couple that can't talk about their marriage without focusing on their kids' problems.
In narcissistic families, the classic triangle is the narcissistic parent, the codependent or enabling parent, and the child. And that's where you get the golden child and the scapegoat.
Let me walk through the mechanics. The narcissistic father and the mother have marital tension they cannot resolve directly. That would require differentiation neither of them has. So, the father directs his emotional energy toward one child, lavishing approval and attention. That child becomes the golden child, an extension of the father's ego. The mother, meanwhile, focuses her anxiety on another child, the one who's difficult, who always causes problems. That child becomes the scapegoat. Both children are serving the same function, stabilizing the parent's marriage by absorbing anxiety that would otherwise destroy it.
Here's the thing Daniel mentioned. Triangulation and flying monkeys. In pop psychology, these get framed as deliberate tactics. The narcissist consciously recruits allies to gang up on the target. But Bowen's triangle suggests something different. The third person isn't recruited. They're pulled in by the emotional physics of the system.
That's a crucial distinction. A flying monkey, in the Bowen framework, isn't a co-conspirator in the moral sense. They're a low differentiation family member who cannot tolerate the anxiety of taking a differentiated stance. The narcissist radiates distress, and the flying monkey absorbs it and acts on it. Not because they've been manipulated in some cartoon villain way, but because the system's pull is stronger than their individual capacity to resist. It's a structural inevitability, not a moral failing.
Which is actually harder to deal with. If they're just evil henchmen, you can write them off. If they're caught in the same emotional physics you are, the picture gets more complicated.
Because it means you can't just label people and walk away. You have to understand the forces acting on them and on you.
Let's get to the third concept, the nuclear family emotional process. What are the patterns?
Bowen identified four patterns that emerge when anxiety is high in a nuclear family. 1. Marital conflict. The couple externalizes anxiety into the relationship itself. 2. Dysfunction in one spouse. One partner absorbs the anxiety and becomes symptomatic while the other appears to function fine. 3. Impairment of one or more children. The anxiety gets projected downward. And 4. Emotional distance. People just disconnect to manage the tension.
Narcissistic families typically roll on tracks 2 and 3. The dysfunction in one spouse track, where the narcissist's undifferentiated anxiety drives the system, and the other spouse becomes the anxious caretaker. And the impairment of children track, where the kids carry what the parents can't handle.
Let me give you a concrete example that ties all of this together. Picture a family. The father is narcissistic, low differentiation, grandiose, needs constant validation. He hits a rough patch at work. His career stress is external anxiety he can't process internally. That triggers marital tension with his wife. They can't resolve it directly. That would require both of them to be differentiated enough to say, we have a problem, without blaming or collapsing. So the tension seeks an outlet. The mother begins focusing all her emotional energy on the youngest child. He's struggling in school. He's defiant. He needs me constantly. The child, absorbing all this anxious attention, starts acting out. His grades drop. He gets in fights. The father points at the child and says, see, he's the problem. If we could just fix him, everything would be fine.
The triangle stabilizes the marriage. The parents are united by a shared project, managing the problem child. The father's work stress is now displaced onto the child. The mother's marital unhappiness is now displaced onto the child. Nobody has to look at the marriage. Nobody has to look at the father's emotional regulation. The child is the lightning rod.
Here's the dark part. The child believes it. He internalizes the identity of the problem. He grows up thinking he's fundamentally broken, when in reality he was serving a structural function in a system he didn't create and couldn't escape. Bowen would say the child's symptoms are a perfect adaptation to an impossible emotional environment.
The Cartman drama triangle gets invoked a lot in narcissistic abuse circles. Rescuer, persecutor, victim. How does that map onto Bowen's triangle?
The drama triangle is more transactional. It's about the roles people play in a specific conflict script. Bowen's triangle is more systemic and less conscious. It's not about role-playing. It's about anxiety regulation. The drama triangle says you're playing the victim. Bowen says the system has positioned you as the anxiety sink, and you didn't choose it. The drama triangle can be useful for recognizing patterns, but it risks making it sound like everyone's just choosing bad roles. Bowen's framework says the roles choose you, and getting out requires changing your position in the entire emotional field, not just deciding to stop being the victim.
Triangulation and low differentiation explain the day-to-day mechanics. But how do these patterns get so entrenched that they persist across generations? That's where Bowen's next concepts come in.
The family projection process and the multi-generational transmission process. These are the engines of inheritance.
Start with projection. What's being projected, and onto whom?
The family projection process is the specific mechanism by which parents project their own undifferentiated anxiety onto a child. It's not random which child gets selected. Bowen observed that parents tend to focus their anxiety on the child who is most emotionally reactive to them, the one who mirrors their own sensitivity. The parent sees something in that child that resonates with their own unresolved issues, and the focus intensifies.
The scapegoat isn't chosen arbitrarily. There's a fit.
There's a fit. And once the projection locks in, the parent begins interpreting everything the child does through that lens. The child is anxious? Proof, they're unstable. The child is calm? They're suppressing something? The child succeeds? They're overcompensating. The child fails? See, we told you. The child cannot win because the interpretation isn't about the child, it's about the parent's need to externalize anxiety.
This is where Bowen's clinical practice gets radical. He'd insist on seeing the whole family, because treating the identified patient alone was pointless. The teenager's depression or acting out wasn't an individual pathology, it was a function of the parent's undifferentiated anxiety. Fix the kid in isolation, and the system will just produce another symptom somewhere else.
There's a famous case from the Bowen literature. A family brings in their teenager, let's call him 16, failing school, hostile at home, the whole picture. Any individual therapist would start working with the teenager on coping skills, maybe CBT. Bowen instead brings the whole family into the room. And what emerges is that the parents' marriage has been deteriorating for years, but they've never addressed it directly. The father is emotionally absent. The mother is anxious and over-involved with the son. The son's problems are the only thing the parents cooperate on. The son is literally holding the marriage together by being the problem.
If you fix the son, the marriage collapses.
Or the parents find another symptom, another child, an affair, a drinking problem. The system demands an anxiety sink. If you remove one, the system will generate another unless you change the underlying differentiation level.
Which brings us to the multi-generational transmission process. This is the one that really reframes breaking the cycle.
It's the concept that makes Bowen's theory unsettling over the long term. Here's how it works. People tend to marry partners at roughly the same level of differentiation. If you're at a 40 on Bowen's scale, you're probably not going to form a stable marriage with someone at a 70. You'll gravitate toward another 40. Your children, through the family projection process, will end up at a slightly lower level than the parents, say 38. Those children grow up, marry other 38s, and their children drop to 36. Over multiple generations, you can go from a family that's functional but a bit anxious to a family with severe dysfunction, addiction, personality disorders, estrangement, without any single traumatic event. just the slow accumulation of undifferentiation.
Narcissistic family systems aren't necessarily born from one monster parent. They can be the endpoint of a multi-generational drift.
And that's why people in these families often feel like they're fighting something invisible. They're fighting a pattern that's been compounding for 3 or 4 generations. The narcissistic grandmother didn't invent her behavior. She inherited a differentiation deficit from her parents and passed it down with interest. Understanding this doesn't excuse the behavior, but it does explain why just be different is such useless advice. The patterns are wired into the emotional architecture of the family.
If you're the person who wants to break the cycle, you're not just changing your own behavior. You're reversing a multi-generational current.
That's where emotional cutoff comes in, which is Bowen's 6th concept and the one that most directly challenges the pop psychology advice around narcissistic families.
Because the standard advice in narcissistic abuse recovery circles is go no contact, cut them off, and Bowen would say...
Bowen would say that emotional cutoff looks like a solution but is actually a symptom. Cutoff is what happens when someone escapes an intense family system by physically or emotionally distancing. They move across the country. They stop answering calls. They declare themselves done. And from the outside, this looks like healthy boundary setting. But Bowen saw cutoff as a sign of unresolved fusion. The person hasn't differentiated. They've just fled. They're still emotionally reactive. They're still defined by the relationship, just in negative space.
The person who goes no contact but still sees every time they think about their mother. They haven't actually left the system. They've just changed their address.
That's the hard truth. And the evidence for it is what happens next. The person who cut off their family of origin often recreates the same dynamics in new relationships. They marry someone who turns out to have similar patterns. They join a workplace with a boss who feels eerily familiar. They get drawn into friend groups with the same toxic triangles. The faces change. The system doesn't.
Which is not to say that distance is never necessary. If you're in physical danger, if the abuse is active and severe, get out! Bowen wasn't arguing against that.
But Bowen's point is that distance alone is not differentiation. Distance can be necessary for safety, but it's not sufficient for healing. True differentiation means you could theoretically be in the same room with the family and not get pulled back into the old emotional currents. You can stay calm. You can think clearly. You can state your own position without needing them to agree or change. You're connected but not fused.
That's a much higher bar than just blocking phone numbers.
And Bowen's intervention model reflected that. He didn't do traditional therapy with the whole family sitting in a circle. He did something he called coaching. He would work with one motivated family member, just one, to help them differentiate. His insight was that if even one person in a system raises their level of differentiation, the entire system has to reorganize. The old triangles stop working. The old projections don't land. The family gets uncomfortable and either adapts or splinters. But either way, the pattern is disrupted.
You don't need to fix the narcissist. You don't need to convince the enabling parent. You don't need to rescue the golden child. You just need to become more differentiated yourself, and the system shifts around you.
That's the core of Bowen's optimism. Change starts with one person, not with fixing everyone else.
All of this sounds heavy, and it is, but Bowen wasn't a pessimist. He believed that even one person changing their position in the system could transform the whole family. So what does that look like in practice?
Let me give 3 actionable starting points. First, map the triangles. This is the diagnostic step. When 2 people in your family are in conflict, who gets pulled in? Who is the identified patient? The person everyone agrees is the problem. Who do you get pulled in to manage? Just mapping this shifts your perspective from why are they so mean to what function does this pattern serve for the system. That alone is a differentiation move. You're observing instead of reacting. Work on your own differentiation, not on changing others. This is the hard one. Differentiation means practicing staying calm when the anxiety spikes. It means saying, I see it differently, without needing them to agree. It means not taking the bait when someone tries to triangle you into a conflict. Bowen's coaching focused on helping people identify their own values and state them clearly without attacking or defending. I'm not going to discuss mom with you. That's between you and her. That sentence, delivered calmly and repeatedly, is a differentiation move. It refuses the triangle. Be skeptical of emotional cutoff as a complete solution. Again, distance can be necessary for safety. But if you've gone no contact and you're still ruminating, still reactive, still finding the same dynamics in new relationships, the cutoff hasn't solved the underlying problem. The internal work of differentiation is what prevents the pattern from following you. The question isn't just, am I away from them? It's, can I be near them without being controlled by them?
For people who want to go deeper, the Bowen Center is the official organization continuing this work. They run workshops, they have a directory of trained coaches, and the definitive text is Family Evaluation by Bowen and Michael Kerr. It's dense, but it's the primary source.
The Bowen Center's website is The Bowen Center, and I should mention, this isn't fringe stuff. Bowen's work is taught in marriage and family therapy programs across the country. It's just less visible in mainstream mental health culture, which tends to prefer individual diagnosis and individual treatment.
Which brings us to the question I want to leave hanging. If Bowen is right that the system is the patient, what does that mean for our culture's obsession with diagnosing individuals? Narcissists, borderlines, codependents. We've built an entire vocabulary around labeling people. Is that actually helpful? Or is diagnosis itself a form of emotional cutoff? A way of labeling the person so we don't have to examine the system that produced them?
That's a provocative question. Because the diagnosis gives you a story. I was victimized by a narcissist, and that story can be healing in the early stages. It names the experience. It validates the pain. But Bowen would warn that the story can also become a trap. If your identity is built around having been victimized by a narcissist, you're still defined by the relationship. You haven't differentiated. You've just inverted the fusion.
The system goes unexamined. The multi-generational patterns that produce the narcissist, and that shaped you too, remain invisible. You're free of the person, but still caught in the structure.
Family systems theory is seeing a resurgence in couple and family therapy right now, but it's still marginal in mainstream mental health. As awareness of relational trauma grows, I think Bowen's ideas are going to become more central. Especially his insistence that change starts with one differentiated person, not with fixing everyone else. That's a profoundly empowering idea. You don't need the narcissist to get therapy. You don't need your siblings to see the light. You just need to do your own work, and the system will respond.
If you take one thing from this episode, let it be this. The system is the patient, not the person. And that's a liberating idea, because it means change is possible from any position within the system. You're not waiting for anyone else.
We'd love to hear from listeners about this. What triangles do you see in your own family? What would it look like to take one differentiated step this week? One moment where you stay calm, state your position, and refuse to get pulled in. Send us your thoughts.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, researchers discovered that sound travels nearly 5 times faster through water than through air, which is why hydrothermal vent ecosystems in the deep ocean are among the loudest environments on Earth. The constant crackle of superheated water meeting near-freezing seawater creates a permanent acoustic backdrop that marine life has evolved to navigate by.
So the deep ocean has its own permanent soundscape, and we're just learning this now.
I have follow-up questions. I'm not sure I want answered.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you got something from this episode, share it with someone who's trying to make sense of their family. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.